M15, number 3B.
That also enabled him to show forth in his own life, without waiting for a long time, the tone of life as soul, a sense of superiority, namely, yeah, and of demonstration. You had in that tone, in the days of creation, multiplication, abundance, let the fish multiply, and in the life of Jesus we get a terrific sense of multiplication. Jesus and his disciples began to heal and to preach the gospel, raising the dead. They began to demonstrate it, and so that principle of life was constantly multiplied through his acts, through his healings, through his activities, through his work, demonstration, multiplication, and finally resurrection. So that after that point we get the sense of life as principle, that life is actually a living principle, but not just applying a principle to something. And he showed it forth through the ascension, where he became one with principle, that his being was actually principle then. So Jesus proved, really, I and my Father are one. That's the tone of principle, of science. And he would prove, really, that all may be made perfect in one, and therefore he could also see that that oneness would stay forever. Life forever would stay as a science, as a principle. I'm always with you until the end of the world. Can you see? He didn't disappear with the ascension. He could see that that principle which he was teaching was an eternal principle, independent of his person. His person could disappear, but the principle that he taught and that he embodied would stay on forever and ever. And so it did. And that principle, really, of which he was teaching, he said, that that would fill so many books that the world would not be able to contain it. Again, it's a book religion that he was preaching, not the temple religion, not the ritual religion, but the principle religion, or a principle Christianity. Yes, so in this way, Jesus really fulfilled the 7 days right in his life through his ascension. But now, let us see, if we go on really in the 1,000-year period, how the tone of life really precipitated itself on the Christian thought. From now on, it is the Christian thought that is under consideration, because that began to unfold and unfold through stages. And so we look at the period from Jesus' birth to round about 1000 AD, that long period about which we don't know really very much in human history. It actually also included what is called the Dark Ages, say from 400 AD on to about towards 900, 800, 900, the Dark Ages. So we don't know really very much, because it was really an age of darkness. But let's see how that those 1,000-year that 1,000-year period was bringing forth just the same life as mind, life as spirit, life as soul, and life as principle. Actually, life as mind would show us first Jesus and his activities. The whole career of Jesus, introducing first that soaring aspiration, showing us first the fatherhood of God, and that with that fatherhood of God, he could fulfill everything, all the 4 days, in an individual way. He was the first one really to show that not the nation would matter, that not the compound of a tribe or of a nation is under consideration, but that everyone is a Lord to himself, and therefore that everyone individually would now, from now on, be able to demonstrate the first 4 days. This is very new, because up to that point, the belief was always that the whole nation, a whole tribe, is responsible for the individual. Now it is the single pioneer that sticks out, and the single pioneer is now saying, I have a unique relationship with God, and I'm going to demonstrate that unique relationship with God. Then this brought forth much fruit, spirit, life a spirit. It brought forth much fruit, and so Christianity spread. From that point on, we have the fruits of life are shown, for instance, first in the Acts of the Apostles, then in the letters, the epistles, then in Revelation of St. John, in incidents like the Pentecostal day, which showed life in and of spirit, where the individual inspiration was necessary, and through the language of spirit they could understand each other. They came from all parts of the world with different language, and yet they began to understand each other through spiritual communication, and they had the first sense of what really it would mean if life is in and of spirit. We have then in this period that runs about over 2 centuries, we have the beginning of Christianity, the early church, the church fathers, the Bible was canonized at that time. But we also have the very opposite, namely the persecution of the early Christians. As Mrs. Eddy says, what is persecution? To hold spirit in the grasp of matter is really the persecutor. To hold life in the grasp of matter is a persecutor. That was what was happening at that time. But one can see that those early Christians were imbued with the sense that life is spiritual and not material, so they didn't really mind to be put before the lions, to be crucified and used as flames to enlighten the streets of Rome and things like that. They knew that there is another kind of life, that life is spiritual. And it is actually this insight that made the only impression on the Romans, because the Romans had always a great respect for courage, for sticking up for something. And so that really made a great impact on the Romans, but we see that the development of that whole Christianity went a very funny way. Namely, and we come to a new period where the Christians were no more persecuted, where they were accepted. We come to the period, really, of life as soul, the multiplication of Christianity, and that started out, really, with the Emperor Constantine, around about 313 AD, when the Emperor was healed through a Christian, and so he found this is really the right religion, and was instituting Christianity as a state religion as an organized religion. Can you hear something? And that was the end of it. From that point on, the healing element disappeared from Christianity. Instead of the healing element came in the hierarchy of priests and emperor. Finally, the church was subdued to the emperor. He had to say, he nominated the popes and things like that. And so we witness from that point on a great decay. Instead of life as soul, which was in the days of creation the multiplication of Christianity, we have the very opposite, really the decay of Christianity. Christianity was absorbed then in the Roman Empire, was subordinated to the emperor and to the political powers. The political powers were then nominating the popes, and so everything was well organized and the spirit of Christianity was lost. But as the Roman Empire began to decay, around about 400 AD, the popes were taking over, and so the pope was, with his hierarchy, governing an organized religion, and the last bit of spirituality went lost. So he usurped really the divine prerogatives and was dictating what people had to believe and what they should not believe. And that naturally introduced the counterfeit of life as principle. If you dictate what is the right teaching, what is the right doctrine, what you are allowed to read, what you are allowed to think and to believe, that's the counterfeit of a principle. So at that point really we go into the Dark Ages in Europe, right round about from 400-500 AD, the so-called Middle Ages started, but with the Dark Age. The Roman Empire decayed, and then we had the invasions of all the heathen. First came the Goths and invaded all Europe, the Christianized countries. Then after the Goths we had the Huns, the Mongols, that invaded the whole country. Then after the Huns came the Vandals, I think you call them Vandals, still a term that is used in the common language. More brutal than brutal can be. And they really swept and flooded over Europe, and you can see that that naturally killed all the spiritual sense, all the intellectual sense. Just brutality was the power that ruled over everything. It is a period where the priests were illiterate, that they could hardly read or write. In the general, there was very little reading. Superstition took the place of intellectual activity. It was an age of intellectual darkness. That's why it's called the Dark Ages. The infallibility of the Pope was accepted, and therefore you can see what a kind of situation reigned at that time in Europe. So at that time, and this is perhaps the central point, the churches were governing the institutions of learning. They controlled learning, They controlled politics. They controlled the kings and emperors in Europe. They controlled the priesthood. They controlled the family. They controlled everything. So that we had a real tyranny, mental tyranny in Europe, and it seemed as all intellectual activity would be dead. And then something happened which saved the situation. Again, something similar with the Babylonian captivity, where the salvation laid with the heathen. Suddenly, the Islam spread over southern Europe. It was not a nice war. They didn't really handle everything with nice gloves. But there is always another side to it. They really brought learning to the courts in Europe. And it was the Islam invasion that kept the Hellenic culture, the Greek culture, the Hellenic culture alive. And so on the various big courts of that Islamic culture, we had a unison of all learning. There the Greeks, the scientists from the Greek culture, from anywhere, the Arabic culture, all was gathered into a center of intellectual activity and formed, so to say, the nucleus of what was going to happen in the next 1,000-year period. They were that light that was shining in the darkness of the Dark Ages, when really the learning process began to start. So I come to the 6,000-year period. From round about 1,000 AD up to the present age, I want to show you that 6,000 period in detail through the seven subtones, just to show that the impact of truth was working over that long period and has brought the development of intellectual momentum right up to the present age. That sixth day of creation is the day of truth, the day of truth which brings the truth to all mankind, where truth brings forth man as the image and likeness of God. Therefore, where the truth is awakened in man, so that man awakens to the truth of being, is searching for the truth, is applying that truth, and therefore that 6,000-year period is the period of scientific consciousness. But that scientific consciousness didn't just come about from 1 second to the other just overnight. It took a long, long period, step by step, to build up a scientific consciousness in men. How did that happen? So we go to the first, to the tone of truth as mind. What can truth as mind first bring out? To bring out, you can see that very clearly, that truth would come to intellectual thought and find an abiding place in the thinking of men. Can you see? In truth as mind, in the days of creation, Mrs. Eddy said, spirit diversifies, classifies, and individualizes all ideas, all thought, which are as eternal as the mind, capital M, conceiving them. So we have truth bringing out the truth about everything through the ideas of mind, through thinking. And this was actually the situation round about the turn of the first 1,000-year period to the second 1,000-year period. What was the intellectual climate in Europe at that time? Perhaps I can summarize it a little bit like this. I can first show the situation, that still free thought was imprisoned in doctrine and superstition, and the infallibility of the Pope was still accepted, and the Church had its own law, controlled every communication channel, controlled the institution of learnings, and that had an effect, truth is mind, namely that it awakened people that something is wrong. Always when one suppresses learning, people want to learn. Always when one suppresses teaching, people want to be taught. And that was the situation at that time. There always then comes, after having been subjugated to the command not to think, that one begins to think. And so, at that time, people began to doubt. That was the first motion, that they began to doubt the authority of the Pope. And they began to argue about it. And that was triggering off an educational process. So people began to think individually. They were no more willing to be taught by some kind of authority what they had to think. They began to think by themselves, because truth is individual. So that brought about a lot of argument. And the very first thing was that the Roman Church broke into parts, into the Roman Church, into the Orthodox Church, the Greek Church. The emperors and the dukes, the political powers, began to question and to doubt the infallibility of the Pope. So they began to reason out things, and it was at that time that for the first time, really, one of the emperors was sending out letters to their dukes accusing the Pope and uncovering everything that was wrong, asking them really to think about it in a new way. Actually, they were excommunicated. That was the best thing that could happen. The moment you are excommunicated, you stick even more to what you know to be truth. And so somehow that revolution of being willing to think alone spread like a prairie fire over Europe and took hold of more and more people. The first universities were then established, University of Bologna, then in Paris, then in Oxford, and you had seats of high learning, though in some way they were still under the supervision of the Church, but these churches became rather independent. In the same way, you have a freeing of the people from the emperors too, from the crown, and suddenly in England, you had for the very first time in the history that Magna Carta, which was granting liberties to the people, so that the king gave up some of their absolute rights and gave to the people rights. So you can see man right was now accepted. That was unbelievable before that time. So the Magna Carta, around about 1250. And so we witness a great liberation from the autocratic government on human thought. Well, that will bring us to truth as spirit, round about 1250 to round about 1500, it covers that period, where there was then a great struggle taking place for new investigation. A struggle against ignorance, especially, showing to people how ignorant they are. For instance, one of the great exponent of that was Roger Bacon. He had a wonderful short summary that he said that the root evil of ignorance is what? And he said that the people had respect for authority. He said that's the root evil of ignorance, that they have respect for authority. Perhaps you hear what I want to say. That they have respect for tradition. Perhaps you hear what I want to say. That the crowd is ignorant, that they have a herd instinct. Perhaps you hear what I want to say, that they don't think by themselves, that they only think what the other one says. And that the vain and the proud are unteachable. So in this way he gathered together really the issue of that time in order to wake up the people from their ignorance and say, well, get ready, begin to think by yourself. And so quite a new development set in of new learning. It is a period of great education starting out in the whole field, not just at the university. Reading and writing was introduced. We have especially then the investigation of words. That's how then everything started. First investigating the meaning of the words, then language was analyzed. Therefore, people were interested in translations. You have the first Bible translations into Latin, the Vulgate, then in English, Wycliffe's translation of the Bible. With the translation of the Bible and the learning drive came the printing of the Bible, printing of school books, printing of scientific books. All that set in so that suddenly one had a world of readers and learners. And that was introducing the Renaissance, truth as spirit, the new birth that set in. And that was round about 1500.